Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Fueled by Frank and Honest Gourmet Coffee. The perfect blend to kickstart your day. Barista quality coffee available at Centra and Supervalue.
10 past 11. Good morning. And on this day of a Wednesday, around this time, it is sex therapy time.
Warning.
The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
And I just want to say again, a little ears warning here. You can catch this chat on our podcast after the show. And joining me on the line is our resident sex and relationship therapist, Rachel Cook. Good morning.
Morning, Jen.
Let's talk about the difference between BDSM and abuse.
Yeah, we have to talk about that. So the difference between abuse and BDSM is consent. You know, consent is a core tenet of BDSM. It's inseparable from it. And so using your kink or fetish as a smokescreen for abusing people. You know, this is a classic abuser's tool, and it's also a wildly inaccurate misrepresentation of what BDSM and kink actually is. You know, so basically mainstream depictions of BDSM relationships are fantasy and almost never show the level of negotiation and ongoing conversations that shape, you know, a healthy, successful BDSM experience. And so, you know, popular culture has been quick to embrace the raunchy, sexy, juicy aspects of the BDSM world, as we've talked about before with things like 50 Shades of Grey, but much less quick to emphasize the extensive small print that needs to accompany practices like this. So the result is that many people simply aren't schooled in safe kink practices, and so are more vulnerable to those who use BDSM to justify abuse, because as in every area of life, pretty much, you know, there are people who are doing it for very dodgy reasons. So, you know, consent is a big part of that. But we need to look further into that, I think, because agreement does not necessarily mean consent. Just because someone says yes, you've got to look at the power dynamics at play. You know, I think what's so important about what's coming out in the last couple of few years, you know, is this like history of victims and survivors not being believed, and also this bigger and bigger uncovering of what's been going on at the hands of mostly white, powerful men, and, you know, for people of all genders, but it seems like particularly women and trans people. And so, you know, we have to look at the power dynamics involved. If you have a very wealthy, you know, white man in his 40s or 50s, and compared to, let's say, you know, a black woman in her early 20s, there's a big power play at you know, happening there. There's a dynamic that is important to look at. You know, I think it's not so much that there's something specifically wrong with there being an age difference between people. It's the wider context. So all this to say that, you know, consent, just because someone agrees to do something, there can be reasons that they're agreeing to do something sexually with you because they are, you know,
of the power play
they want the status, they are, you know, people pleaser, they have maybe their own trauma background where they feel that they have to agree to things in order to be liked. You know, most of us, especially people who've been conditioned as women growing up, you know, are often very afraid to disappoint people or anger people or to upset them, so they'll say yes to things that they don't actually want to do. So we have to look further into this.
Can I ask you, why are some people into BDSM, especially more extreme forms?
Yeah, so people who are not interested in kinky sex or BDSM can find this really hard to understand. But some of us are just wired to really enjoy more extreme sensations, whether that's emotional or physical or kind of a mental challenge. You know, BDSM requires a lot of trust, exceptional communication, as I said, high awareness of your feelings and needs. It can build confidence. It can be adventurous. It's creative. For some people, it's about reclaiming their body and identity. You know, you can explore aspects of yourself that you don't normally get a chance to explore otherwise. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people would be into this and find it extremely rewarding and fulfilling and enjoyable. For others, it can help you enter different states of consciousness in a way that meditation can, or for some people, certain kinds of drugs. You know, so you have things called top space and subspace. So generally, you'll have a submissive and a dominant in a scene, well, particularly when it's two people. So the person who's the dominant person in that scene can enter something called top space, which is where they feel incredibly sort of in a sense of flow, They know exactly what's going to happen. They feel very, very, you know, present and aware. And then you have the person in subspace who's the submissive within the scene or dynamic. And that can be an extremely pleasurable place of feeling like you're sort of surrendering to what's going on, which, again, does not mean that things are happening outside of your consent, because all of this needs to be set up beforehand. But yeah, there are lots of reasons why people can be into this.
Well, let's talk about that and doing it safely. I mean, you talked about knife play there as one aspect of BDSM, but how can you do it safely? Because things, I suspect, can go wrong very quickly.
Of course they can. You know, this is the kind of glamorized, and what we see is this really polarized view of either, oh yeah, like everyone should be into BDSM and it's really sexy and it's completely normal. And then the other side of it being, you know, people die from this. This is awful. It's only abusers and only people who are acting out their trauma. It's like, you know, the vast majority of people fall, you know, nowhere near those extremes of why they're interested in BDSM. And so BDSM practitioners use the catchphrase safe, sane and consensual to summarize the kind of best practices for sexual encounters, especially those ones that mix with a level of, you know, kind of pain and violence. So again, extensive conversations, negotiated checklists and safe words are tools for navigating this consent. You have things like setting time constraints, which can be very important, you know, because most people who are into BDSM, they're not constantly on. You know, you want to have kind of time limits where it's you're saying like we're going to do a scene now, which is referring to kind of an episode of play or role play. And, you know, we'll do it this evening. And when it's done, it's done. For some people, it's making a list of things that you absolutely need in order to have in order to feel safe, in order to feel heard. And then also make a list of things that would be great if they happened. People have to know how to describe and set their own limits. And so this is the problem with what we're hearing about Armie Hammer, is that it's not so much necessarily his kinks or his fetishes or the things, his fantasies, the things that he's interested in that are in any way the problem. It's the fact that he appears to be coercing and manipulating and deceiving the women that he dates into getting into this stuff with him, and basically pushing them to get involved with stuff that they have either no experience or next to no experience with, and that they are clearly saying, you know, even though neither of them have said that he raped them, they've not said that he was that it was non-consensual or that they said no, but they are being very clear that his actions and behavior are dangerous and emotionally and psychologically damaging. You know, that this,
so that's the worrying part. It's not the kink shaming, so to speak.
Exactly. You know, people are trying to say it's not about commenting on a sex life. There's nothing wrong with having fantasies in your head and, you know, to certain degrees, I suppose, acting them out with people consensually, where there's a lot of discussion and negotiation about how to still make that safe. But in this case, it seems that BDSM is a smokescreen for him wanting to hurt women. Now, we also have to be clear that we don't actually know what's true. You know, there are also reasons why people would embellish or even lie about these things. Mm-hmm. However, there is a very massive history of survivors and victims not being believed. So I think it's important to both take it with a pinch of salt and learn from this, but also we don't actually know what's true or not true about this situation.
It's good to talk about it, though, because we're all learning a whole lot about it all. What has this got to do with sex positivity?
Oh, well, look, the sex positive movement, so that was basically it promotes and embraces sexuality with few limits beyond an emphasis on safe sex and the importance of consent. So this was something that basically emerged. The sex positive movement emerged in the 1980s. It was partly in response to HIV and AIDS at the time as an attempt to embrace a wider range of sexual activities that people, particularly LGBTQ+ people, might engage with safely. But it was also about a split in feminism at the time between sex negative feminists and other people who were against pornography, S&M and sex work. And then you had these sex positive feminists who were affirmative about these things and the women who were involved with them. So, you know, there's kind of this binary again of people who are sex negative, who, you know, often that can be very religion and shame based. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. And then this idea of sex positivity, which says that we should embrace every aspect of sex and see it as, you know, positive, when I think actually we're seeing now this shift into what some people are calling sex critical, which is that, you know, not so much critical as in being negative about it, but to, you know, to question these things, that it's important to question things, because being just positive about everything means that there can be an implicit sense that because people can be sexual, that they should be sexual. And it can also mean that there's kind of a hierarchy within sex about what the limits are. So I think, you know, sex negative, sex positive, that binary, not so useful to us. But being sex critical, where we consider, you know, who is involved, what are the power dynamics, what does consent mean, what do people actually want, how can people be genuinely caring about each other's welfare within this. You know, it doesn't mean you have to take responsibility for someone else's emotions, because, you know, their emotions are theirs, but that we have an impact on each other. And if we're just going around sort of with this kind of libertarian attitude of I get to do what I want to do, especially in the case of, you know, men, it seems that there's, you know, the huge potential for harm and masses of trauma and damage from that.
Okay, so let me ask you this finally, Rachel. What are your biggest tips and advice for people who are out there, or couples who want to fulfill fantasies? What is the way to go about it? What would you say to them?
Oh, if BDSM and kink is something that you're interested in exploring with a partner, a conversation about it needs to occur, where both partners are sober and well in advance of any clothes coming off. And it shouldn't be just one conversation either. You know, like consent itself, talking about this kind of play should be continual conversation with frequent check-ins. And if you want to explore this side of yourself and your, you know, relationships with other people, you know, I would absolutely recommend that you attend a workshop, speak to experienced kinksters, read some of the many books available on safe kink practices before jumping in. That is the best way. Educate yourself beforehand, to put everything in place so that you can do this safely and have a lot of fun.
Good on you. Rachel, thank you so much for that. That is Rachel Cook, our psychotherapist and mental health consultant. She is amazing. You can follow Rachel on Instagram at Rachel Jane Cook with an E on the end. She will be back next week, as always, every Wednesday. So if you have any questions or anything that you would like to put to her, get in touch with the team 24/7 on jen@rte.ie.
It's okay. You can all come out now, because sex therapist Rachel has now left the building. Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.